Blog Talk Radio.
Are you on, Cecilia?
Greetings, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, and I am the host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have on with us Paul Bornstein-Sun, who is an incarcerated individual who has been in prison since 1999. Paul has a story to tell, and we want to welcome him on the show today, because sometimes prisoners are stereotyped, and no one really understands some of the things that they go through prior to the offense, following the offense, and from years incarcerated in prison. People do not hear the voices of prisoners, yet they listen to others who are unfamiliar with what's going on in the prisons. So we have on with us Paul today. He's going to tell us his story, and he's going to tell us the good that he's been doing and some of the things that he wants to do if and when released. So, Paul, are you on with us now?
Yeah, I feel really blessed to be having this opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Well, we want to welcome you on with us, and we'd like you to really let the audience know your true feelings and let the audience know the voice, hear the voices of those who cannot speak on their own. So you have this opportunity. It's a blessing for us to have you on the show with us, and I really appreciate the time you're taking. So, Paul, you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, let me start from the beginning of my incarceration. My name is Paul Thorstenson. I grew up in Seattle. I basically lived in Seattle my whole entire life until my arrest at the age of 18. I was incarcerated of May of 1999 for a murder that occurred during a robbery of a drug dealer. Now, at the time, I didn't have any criminal prior criminal record, and the prosecutor was arguing that I should be 65 when I was released. He insisted that if I only received the 25 years for a murder one, that I would have been way too young to return back to the community. So instead of my youth and lack of criminal record becoming mitigating factors in my favor, they were used against me. So in February of 2000, I ended up pleading guilty to a murder one and received 583 months, which equated out to about 48 and a half years. And
how long have you been in so far?
I've been incarcerated for 20 years.
Okay. It's a long time.
It is an incredibly long time, but it's also been a blessing to realize that we're not our tragedies, we're what we make of our situations.
At the age of 18, I will say this, And the psychologists are still talking about it. Sometimes it's not until they're in their mid to late 20s where they actually start to mature psychologically. And so a lot of the things that have been done as an 18-year-old or even as a 20 or 25-year-old, a lot of these things have been done out of ignorance, out of mental illnesses, out of addictions. There's so many reasons why prisoners end up in prison at a young age. And this is something that the audience really needs to know and understand, these situations that occur, these stumbling blocks that are put before you, and the years that you have matured and deserve a second chance.
Yeah, I love that. It's just, you know, it's interesting hearing them kind of talk about the brain science and the prefrontal lobe development and our ability to control impulses. And even, you know, going through criminal justice and criminology courses, and they were talking about, you know, this kind of angry young man syndrome and how the penitentiary is full of young men coming to prison but spending their whole entire lives well after the brain development has corrected itself as they got older and matured and built themselves as men. I wish I could stress the importance of how much people change over a lifetime, and I'm sure everybody can understand that's been privy to this human experience.
The thing is, people understand, and yet a lot of people are not really trying to understand the after effects in all these years and these second chances. Crime is escalating in the community, and they feel that no one should be free because of these things. But what they don't realize is crimes may be committed, they may still be escalating. But at the same time, men like yourself, even women, that have been in for 20 years or more, they have already served their time. It's time for them, now that they are mature, to be able to be free, because I'm sure all of you can be more help to these young people out in the community than any counselor out in the communities that have gotten a piece of paper in education and yet have no experience. Kids would look up to you and other prisoners because they know that a lot of you have been where they are.
Yeah, and that's really been the foundation of my belief system, is trying to use my maturity to help the other young men that I'm surrounded with while I'm in here. Because one of the, probably the greatest life-affirming moments for me was when I looked back and I realized in life all of the people that I was affecting with my decisions and my impacts and how I was carrying much farther past just a general circle, that it was spreading out into my own family and friends. And I really latched on to the adage that I was loving all the people that hurt me, and I was hurting all the people that loved me. And I knew that I needed to do better, and I knew that I owed these people a debt of gratitude and really just the kind of energy and spark that I knew that I could put into the penitentiary. But what I realized is, despite all of these things, when I got to the penitentiary, I looked up and I lifted my head and I seen thousands of other men just like me.
Exactly.
You know, people that wanted to change their lives but didn't know how, and really needed a conscious collective for all of us to move in the right direction and start admitting that what we did and the way that we did it was wrong.
Paul, can I ask you, did you come from a two-parent home or a single-parent home?
No, I came from a single-parent home.
And did you have siblings?
I had one younger brother.
And was there, there was no father in the home or no mother?
My parents were separated, so, you know, I would jet back and forth from mom's house to dad's house.
Okay, the reason I ask is that takes into consideration a lot, too, because there's so many kids out there being raised in a single-parent home, and they look to others that are going through the same thing they're going through, you know, for support. And I believe that's where a lot of these extra troubles come in, because it's kids that are frustrated, that, you know, that are lacking, and they're getting together, and that this is where it turns into... sometimes turns into disaster when they're supporting one another and they're all feeling the same frustration.
I wish I could really point at the truth of it, was that it was a bunch of kids raising other kids. Like when I started separating from my family, it was my friends in the community that I grew up with that ended up becoming my family. And we were vicariously making bad decisions through each other, and we were teaching each other and reiterating these cultures. And at the same time, you know, I was missing a lot of guidance because I was separated from my family. But I say all that to, you know, really talk about the integrity and character of my family, that after I came into the penitentiary, you know, I was really haunted by the idea that my whole life was changed, and I was convinced that my family was going to leave me and that they believed I was a failure. But instead of leaving me, my family was coming to me and showing me their love and support, showing me that they believed in me and encouraged me, and not let my life be determined by the circumstances that surrounded me. And, you know, this is a story of their commitment and their ability to recoup as parents, because from that point on, I started to become more committed to making significant changes in myself, my relationships, and my community.
Sometimes parents don't really understand their children are going through things, because they're, a lot of times parents are focused on their own issues, and they feel that their children are doing okay, when in fact, maybe that child or those children are hurting, and the parent doesn't see it until a tragedy does happen. And then they try their best to resolve the issue between their child and themselves, because they're hurting, the child's now hurting, wherever the child may be, whatever prison the person is in. And there should be not prisons, but long-term facilities for people that commit crimes. I don't care what kind of crime it is, but there should be long-term facilities where parents and their children or family members can come together and try to heal together while at the same time rehabilitating the person that has committed the offense. And I am simply opposed to prisons because I don't feel that prisons are helping anybody, and I don't feel that the rehabilitation is getting. A lot of you prisoners, I'm finding out, are rehabilitating yourselves, as I've seen with Taylor and as I've seen with others that they're bringing on and others on the outside. You're pretty much healing yourselves, and that's the maturity that's in effect now, because you are growing and that you have aged, and with age comes wisdom and discernment.
It comes with responsibility, too.
Exactly.
Because, like you said, with me and Taylor, you know, we had to do it by ourselves. That the culture wasn't accommodating for change. It wasn't accommodating for growth. It wasn't a bunch of people rattling around trying to figure out how to raise the youth. They were, when I first came into the penitentiary in the 1990s, they were talking, the general conversation was about how to become a better criminal. And for me, it was common sense compelled me to reject that paradigm. But, you know, wanting change for myself, I realized once I started to grow and transform myself within, that I realized how necessary it was to not keep it to myself. That I had a responsibility as an individual to share with others around me and give them the help that was denied me when I first came in, because I realized we control the temperature of the penitentiary and we control the conversations that are being had, and we have an opportunity to help young men transform and change much faster than it took for us to change. Like it took me 20 years to develop as fastly as I did, but I think that we could expedite that process with young men coming in if the community is single-minded and thinking that a level of restorative conversation needs to be had with these young men. Like common sense from leaders and strong male role models.
Do they have programs in where you are that help with issues like that, or tough, you know, what is it where they bring young people in to talk to prisoners or to see what's going on in the prisons? Scared Straight programs, do they have them?
So when I first got involved with Redemption, we were getting ready to develop our own Scared Straight program. And I remember, like, they brought in, like, 30 of us into a room. And 30 of the men, literally, like, you could see a line get drawn in the middle of the room where half the people said, this thing will never work. And the other half of the people were like, we should give it a try. Like, we should use our experiences to try and help young men. And you know, just children in general, to try and prevent people from making the same mistakes that we made. And so half the people stormed out of the room, the other half stayed in, and as we started really going through our collective experiences, we realized that a lot of us had been involved with Scared Straight programs growing up, and it was full of holes. Like, there was so much emphasis on yelling and scaring the kids that it didn't really fit with the model of what we were trying to accomplish. So we tried to rethink the machine. Like, what is the message that we're giving to kids when they come into the penitentiary? And we realized that we did not enjoy the fact that it was glorified or that it was about scaring anybody. that we realized that a really, truly honest conversation needed to have about, you know, our relationship with our parents, what it was like growing up, how much we regret the things that happened. And as we started getting into the process where we were reaching out to high schools and we were communicating with the community, like, there was a watershed moment when we realized that, because we only have a couple of hours while we're up there, that it wasn't so much that the kids needed somebody to tell them what to think or how to act, but they needed somebody that believed in them and was compassionate
exactly.
enough to be willing to listen to them, because nobody listens to kids. And I, some of the best meetings I ever went to, you know, it was 40% of us talking and 60% of them talking.
Mm-hmm.
Like people really need, what is the right term? They say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Exactly.
It wasn't until we were expressing levels of compassion and trust and respect that they really started opening up to us, and it seemed like each one of these kids was living within his own tragedy. Like, there was this kid, Mitchell, and I remember us talking about our experiences with addiction and our friends that had committed suicide and people that had lost their lives, and all the kids had something to say except for this kid, Mitchell, and he started crying. He started crying in the middle of the meeting, but he never said anything, and afterwards the kids went back to their school and they wrote impact statements. And so the impact statement ends up coming back to us, and we get an opportunity to hear what each one of the kids said about their experience. And we get to this letter from this kid, Mitchell. And it starts off and says, I'm 17 years old. I'm a heroin addict. I've been trying to be sober for the last couple of weeks and struggling. And I was like, man, like, how tragic is a world where teenagers are heroin addicts? And he's going on to explain that, you know, after meeting with us, he had planned on robbing a drug dealer. And I'm listening to this kid say my whole entire story, except my story verbed, and I ended up killing a drug dealer in the course of a robbery. And this kid was based on our conversation. He said, I was waiting for him to come over, and I threw away the gun, and I changed my mind. And
wow.
I was so floored. Because this is the whole entire reason why we got involved. Like, when I said that the room divided in half and half the room said it didn't work and the 15 men stayed behind, we ended up having a conversation and we said, well, like, everybody left because they felt like the work wasn't worth it. And the people that remained behind, like, probably the most prophetic thing that happened in the whole entire conversation is they said, how much work is one person's life worth? Like, are all you guys ready to throw in behind this under the pretense that we may work for 10 years straight, but eventually we're going to say something that helps somebody's life? And we were willing to do that. I don't know how many lives we've changed over the years, but I do believe that we did it for the right reasons, and we used what was given to us, and it really could have been wasted. This tragedy could have been wasted. But the importance in human nature is to try and figure out how to make good out of the life that's given us.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
People in society, they want kids to be kids in one instance. And then in another instance, they want them to be adults. And this is the way it's been for a long time. Kids need an opportunity to be kids, and they need an opportunity to express their feelings, not through straight love. I mean, I believe in discipline, but I also believe in being a friend to these kids. And I don't believe in just it takes a village to raise a child. I think it takes a nation.
You have 30 seconds remaining.
Your time is running out. So, Paul, is there anything you want to say, any way you want people to get in touch with you, if there's any way they can help? Give your information or whatever?
Yeah, so my name is Paul Thorstensen. My DLC number is 807019. You can contact me on JPay. You can look me up in DLC Finder. Hello?
I guess he got disconnected. Well, I guess that's it. That was Paul, and that his name is Paul Thurstensen. And unfortunately, Paul got his time ran out with us. So we'd like to thank Cecilia Conley for bringing him on with us, and we hope to have others coming on at some time in the near future. This is the voice of prisoners, and it's so much of a blessing to be able to hear from the prisoners themselves, all about them, rather than to listen to the media and listen to people who do not even visit with the prisoners or know anything about prisoners to talk about getting into the minds of a criminal. We want to hear these voices. We want to know what's going on in their lives. We want to know what caused them to do what they did. We want to know their ages at the time. We want to know if they were from single-parent homes or from two-parent homes. There is so much it goes on with the prisoner. And many people, they stereotype. They don't understand at all what a prisoner is going through or what they are all about. We can't forget the victims, but we must know that the prisoners, many of them, were victims before becoming offenders. We have to take that into consideration when thinking about our role in having prisoners have to spend the rest of their lives in a cage. There are so many that can do so much good on the outside. For those who are thinking, contemplating of suicides and homicides. So let's look at these prisoners. Let's try to figure out what they're going through. Let's try to understand them. Let's get into their minds so that we can talk about the truth of what a prisoner has been going through, what caused them to go through what they did, and also the good that they are doing now. I'd like to thank again Cecilia Conley, who has been instrumental in bringing prisoners to the forefront to give their stories. And Cecilia, are you on with us now? Cecilia?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Can you
now.
Hear me? Yes.
Yeah, I really want to thank
you. Yes, I'm here.
That was a very good interview, and I really appreciate your bringing these people on because we want to hear directly from the prisoners themselves, their stories. Yeah. So many times we're hearing it from the media, who is getting half the story from wherever. Mm-hmm. We're hearing it from people that they allege to be experts in the fields of the offenders, the criminal minds, who are not even meeting with prisoners to get the truth. And sometimes mm-hmm. we get it from law enforcement, and even then we know what prosecutors in the courts are like in many cases with all the corruption and with all the deception that goes on in there. There's a lot of times where things are blown way out of proportion. So I am so thankful, and I want to thank you so much, Cecilia, because you have been a true warrior in bringing these things to the forefront, giving the people, the audience, a chance to listen to these prisoners, to know what they're about, and to actually consider them when they come out to help in preventative mm-hmm. situations.
Yes. No, thank you for giving this space. And the same conviction is about giving them a platform to express themselves, to share their stories of change. So we are very grateful that you want to work with us to make this happen. Thank you so much.
Well, I think what
Can
you're
you
doing
me?
Is amazing. Yes. I think what you're doing is amazing. And I would once again have you let the audience know how they can get in contact with you so that they can, if they wish to, volunteer virtually. They don't even have to leave the comforts of their mm-hmm. home. There's so much that everyone can do to improve what's going on in this country today. And if they want to just make calls to politicians, if they want to write to the prisoners and encourage them, support them, or if mm-hmm. they want maybe, respond to the prisoner request that you yourself receive. So if you want to, mm-hmm. just let the audience know ways in which they can help.
Yes, they can definitely help us to do everything that you say and also to promote what we're doing, to help us to reach more people. This is about reaching more people and opening their minds and eyes and souls and hearts of people to realize that these people, these individuals made a mistake in the past. Most of them were very young and have a very difficult situation when they were younger or they were kids, and they deserve a second chance. And we need, first of all, to make awareness with the society so then we can actually work all together to make changes in this country, because we are stronger together, and that will be the dream come true whenever we all come together and realize that these people, all of them, deserve a second chance if they have been rehabilitated. And so the website is www.designconviction.com. There's a form to subscribe. There's also a form to contact us. And I'm actually the person that responds to all the emails. So I'm going to be really happy to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. It'll be great. And also, if there's anyone interested in becoming a virtual administrative clerk, contact Cecilia, because I'm pretty sure she can use an administrative clerk to work with her, maybe to keep track of spreadsheets on the volunteers, to keep spreadsheets on the prisoners calling in. So that's another way that you can help a virtual volunteer right from the homes or right from wherever you are to be able to help Cecilia with some of these tasks as well. Cecilia, I want to thank you again for everything that you're doing. It's really amazing, and prisoners are actually responding in a positive way to what you and Taylor have done. So I want to thank you for all these, and I look forward to having you on the show again this Saturday as planned, as scheduled, and we will take it from there. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we close?
No, just again, thank you so much for your time, Leona, and I will be happy to receive any type of queries. I'm here, and please contact me. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. And I'd like to also at some point in time have some of these prisoners that have been speaking to have them back at a later time, and I'm sure that you'll be able to coordinate those dates and times and let me know about them. But I'd like to hear more of their stories as well.
Definitely. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Cecilia, and it's been a pleasure having you on each and every time. And when you speak to your husband again, tell them that we appreciate what both of you are doing.
I will, definitely. Thank you.
Okay. We are now signing off, everyone. Bye. And we hope to hear from you or have you on the show with us when we come back on Thursday. We will be interviewing Stephen Bobo again, and that will be at 6:30 p.m. So we'll look forward to having the audience with us then. And again, Saturday with Cecilia and her husband. And that will be Saturday at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon. Looking forward to it. Very interesting conversations. Join us all. Thank you so much. And thank you, Cecilia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.